Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
On 2UE, George and Paul's Crime File.
Okay, and today it's what has become of Graham Potter.
If ever there was a homicide that deserved a life sentence, never to be released, it was the mutilation murder of Wollongong teenager Kim Barry. Yet, Kim's murderer has been freed time and time again to commit more crimes and is now on the run. Also, it seems that the mafia want to have a chat with him. That's if they haven't already, which could explain why he hasn't been seen around lately. The horrendous discovery of 19-year-old shop assistant Kim Barry's naked, headless torso in bushland near Kiama on the New South Wales south coast on February the 8th, 1981, sent shockwaves through the local Illawarra community. Kim was a thoroughly decent young lady who lived at home in a loving family environment and had disappeared the previous day. Kim's arms and legs had been tied and some of her fingers were missing. That's a brutal, terrible, terrible murder. 3 months later, Kim's decomposed head, fingers, a blood-soaked dressing gown and two bed sheets were found in a plastic garbage bag in nearby bushland and her skull was shattered. Detectives determined that on the night she died, Kim had been with a local coal miner, 24-year-old Graham Potter, who had disappeared. Police raided Potter's flat, removing a bathroom wash basin and part of the drainage system. The blood-soaked sheets and dressing gown found with Kim's body parts were Potter's, who now was the chief suspect. Soon after, Potter's fiancée's car turned up outside the police station at Goulburn, 130 miles away, kilometres away. On the front seat was a shirt stained in Kim Barry's blood and a note from Potter to tell his telling his fiancée that he believed his life was in danger. 2 months later, Potter turned up at his parents' home protesting his innocence. He was charged with Kim's murder. During his 17-day Wollongong Supreme Court trial in March 1982, Potter clutched a Bible and proclaimed his innocence. Potter told the same bizarre story, full of inconsistencies, that he had told at his committal hearing and refused any cross-examination for fear he would be ridiculed by the prosecution, and justifiably so. Potter claimed that on the evening of the murder, he had attended his Bucks night at the local fraternity bowling club with his forthright for his forthcoming wedding. Later that evening, he and a mate caught a taxi to the Crown Meadows disco. Potter claimed that it was here that he met Kim Barry, who latched onto him straight away, and he couldn't get away from her without being rude. This is Potter's explanation. Potter said he took Kim to a table and she told him the most extraordinary story. "I've got to get out of here and I cannot leave by myself," she allegedly said. Potter said Kim then told him that two men were in the club earlier looking for her and were now waiting outside. Kim asked Potter to escort her outside to a taxi and, being a gentleman, of course, he agreed. Potter said he walked Kim outside but didn't see the two men she was terrified of. He walked Kim to a taxi rank and, whilst waiting, he asked about the two men and what they wanted with her. Kim wanted to talk about it, but only at his place. At Potter's flat, he put the kettle on and Kim went to the bathroom. Kim returned a few minutes later and there was a knock on the door. Potter opened the door and two men forced their way in. They said that they wanted to talk to Kim on her own and that Potter, well, he'd better make himself scarce or he'd get hurt. Potter said that Kim said she would be okay, so he reluctantly went to the bedroom. Can you imagine the police sitting down listening to this,
yeah,
George?
Aye.
Can you imagine what they're thinking, these hard men who investigate homicides all the time?
They'd be thinking this is him.
Listening to this drongo?
Yeah.
Anyway, here we go. We'll go on with it. Hearing loud shouting, Potter returned to the lounge room to find Kim lying on the floor with one of the men kneeling over her while the other was going through her purse. He saw a lot of blood and realised she was dead. One of the men grabbed him and slammed him up against the wall. The man said that if he didn't keep his mouth shut and do as he was told, then his family would be killed. Potter agreed and was then ordered to return to the disco as though nothing had happened, which he did, and danced the night away until he and a mate returned to the unit at 4 a.m. Not knowing what to expect, Potter was relieved to find that Kim's body had disappeared and a blanket had been thrown on the lounge room floor. Potter's friend slept on the lounge while he went to bed and cried himself to sleep. Early the following morning, after his friend had gone, there was a knock on the door, and the two murderers forced their way in and took him to the spare bedroom where Kim's body lay. They forced him to watch as they decapitated her and cut off her fingers with a knife and hacksaw from the kitchen. Then they ordered Potter to dispose of the body or they would kill him. Potter dumped the body parts where he thought they would never be found. The following night, Potter scrubbed his unit from top to bottom to destroy the evidence and took his girlfriend's car and fled, abandoning it in Goulburn. A few weeks later, he gave himself up. Quite understandably, the jury just took over an hour to find him. I'm surprised it took them an hour, to be quite honest. The jury took over just over an hour to find him guilty of murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison. Now, he's in prison, and in 1990, he escaped from jail, and 3 months was added to his sentence. Here we go. On the 20th of August, 1993, this bloke's committed the most heinous crime that you could ever imagine. The Supreme Court reviewed Potter's life sentence under the Truth in Sentencing legislation, which came in before he was actually sentenced, granting Potter a minimum term of 12 years and 8 months. And Justice Allen said, "While no one can look into the secrets of another man's heart," this hasn't bloke hasn't got a heart, "into another man's heart, the objective signs are those of a man who has been rehabilitated."
Oh, where have we heard that before?
Oh, yeah. God, can you believe this? Potter served 14 years of his life sentence before being released on parole in 1996. Now, this bloke has committed the most awful murder. He's allegedly been rehabilitated. Here we go. In 2008, Potter was arrested in Tasmania and charged with 32 other people in connection with the Calabrian Mafia's importation into Melbourne of 4.4 tonnes of ecstasy pills in cans of pomodori palati peeled. Pomodori palati peeled Italian tomatoes. There's some.
They're good tomatoes.
Someone opens a can of those and tips them into the spaghetti bolognese. They get a nice surprise.
The party will go off with a bang.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell me about it. Anyway, in the Italian tomatoes valued at $445 million. Now, Potter turned informer on what was then the world's biggest ever haul of ecstasy, which was carried out by Griffith Mafia boss Pasquale Barbaro. Despite being a convicted killer and escapee, Potter was granted bail on the drug importing charges.
What?
He was granted bail. He was one of 32...
With a history of escaping jail.
The biggest smuggling importing of ecstasy in the history of the world. 6 months later, while still on bail, Potter was charged in Victoria with conspiracy to murder after being accused of a hired hitman. He was allegedly a hired hitman over his alleged botched attempts to execute two of Barbaro's enemies. One, a friend of underworld identity, Mick Gatto. Not a good look there. Mm. He was granted bail and disappeared. This is our bloke who's been reformed. Potter, 53, was last seen in August 2010 after a routine traffic infringement stop at Tully, south of Cairns, where he ran off into the bushes and hasn't been seen since. Now, there's a $100,000 reward on his head. That's just from the federal government. the other people would have a reward on his head too. Yeah.